Say our opening prayer, please. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master, Dearest Mother, Beloved David, Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles and give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple, make my heart thy altar, make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Om. Om. Peace, bliss, amen. Short meditation. If you would do the reading tonight, please, on chapter 11 numerically, but called the conclusion.
Yes. This is the little preamble. The cross and the lotus. The lotus is the symbol of God in the East. and the cross, the symbol of God in the form of the Christ in the West. There must be the union between the East and the West if we are to be one in God as we should be. We must recognize that the way of the cross is only the first part, the doing away with the power of the five senses. You must become one with God, with the Christ, because he is the head of the church, which is your own body, and he is to be found here, the thousand-petaled lotus of the brain. So this chapter is called Realization. This is my story, my way of looking at the crucifixion, because I was there. And to me, anything that he may ask of me is nothing compared to him, compared to what he has given me, the bliss of his presence, the knowledge of his infinite being within myself. This is not peculiar to me, nor to any man, but to every man. This is the hope that has been denied humanity, and this is the hope that is being given again to the world, because the Christ still lives. He lives in the heart of each of us, because he is with us always. How would I be able to tell you all these things of the real meaning of the mystical crucifixion if I hadn't experienced it myself? It was a very strange experience, one that I had never really read about in the sense that I went through it, and never expected to go through in that sense. I wanted my God realization, but I didn't know I was going to get it in the way I got it. It is a tremendous price to pay, but I count it as nothing, even as Christ did, for the glory which came afterward. I was lifted up into the highest part of my being, and I came face to face with God. The light of his presence was so great that it was overwhelming, and I was filled with such bliss as I could not as you could not possibly dream of. The one who attains that high state of oneness with him, in truth, sits at the hand of the Father and has jurisdiction over all of the things of heaven and earth. But that one is completely subject to the will of the Father. I come not to do my will, but his. God realization cannot be described. It can only be experienced. It says in the scriptures that no man has seen God at any time. This is true because man in his human consciousness cannot see God. But when he lifts his eyes to the hills, he goes into the mountain of his own being and meditates and prays upon God unceasingly. Then God, through his infinite mercy and grace, lifts him up, and indeed he comes face to face with the great light of his own soul. This light is indescribable, but the feeling of bliss is so great that no satisfaction of the senses, which you can possibly imagine or have ever experienced, can in any way compare with it. It is indescribable, and you want never to let it go. The bliss, the glory that I experienced was so great that I didn't want to come down again. I had gone beyond human consciousness, and to come back and to walk among all the people of the earth in order that I might teach them the truth of my experience really took some doing. Yet when I was given that choice by God, there was no doubt of the answer. I had to come back. All were my children, because I identified with God in all. I had to come back. I had to teach them the truth of my experience. Yet in order to come back, which incidentally took me 12 long years to come to the state of balance which I now enjoy, you must come down and function in human consciousness in this world of duality. You have no choice. The human ego has been crucified, but there must be an ego there, a sense of I-ness, a center from which you can operate in a human body. Because even though that body has been divinized, it is still made of flesh. It still operates in this world. It still is dependent only on God, but the five senses have to be used. The 10 qualities of the subtle mind have to be used. So it is a thing to come down and function. If the kingdom of heaven and God are to be found within, as Jesus said, then you have to take the means within to reach that heaven within yourself, to find God within yourself, so that you may see his second coming out of the clouds of the heaven of your own being. There can be no other answer. If it were to be so, after 2,000 years, I'm sure we would have seen something more of a miracle on the outside than we see today.
This miracle takes place in each and every one of us when we make ourselves ready to receive him. He is the sole occupant of this whole universe. He is the sole doer of this whole universe. And so no matter what, all things go to him and are contained within him. There is nothing but God everywhere. Lift your consciousness to the heavens within yourself and see his glory. He fills your being. He fills you with his light, and he walks before you, making perfect your way. I come to beg you to go to him and to find that one who is your very self. I tell you the truth that has never been told like this before. But you see, the time for knowing has come. I have gone the way. I have paid the price. And I offer you this gift of knowledge.
Well, it's either true or it's not. She speaks from great authority.
And as Mother says, how could she describe it all if she hadn't been through it? And especially given the fact that she didn't have any idea what she was going to go through.
How could she describe it? And yet she says it's indescribable. So the guru points the way, doesn't she? She says you can't get her realization. And Master said, you can't get Yogananda realization. You should strive for God realization. But how could she have such authority without having gone through it herself? The truth of that is felt within. It's either true or it's not. If you're so lucky as to be able to access that great power that came from Mother, that comes from Mother's and Mother's teachings, not all people are, no matter their height and spirit. It is peculiar that we are required to get our God realization through one guru. Other teachers, great masters, can lift us up and can teach us and could help us. But only the one guru, the Satguru, can plant the seed that will blossom in that way. Mother's radiance is pouring out all the time. But it is in the sense of her responsibility to her disciples only. She has a world and a universal aspect too. But for her disciples, there is a tuning of the disciple to Mother's teachings. And people who aren't attracted to this teaching doesn't say anything about their attainment in the spirit. And those of us who are attracted to it, it says very little about us, ours either, but it does bode well for us to have a great master. Mother talks about the bliss of what she was experiencing. As I was listening this evening, it's so strongly true that the bliss she's talking about does not have an emotion to it in the sense of ecstasy. It is that unpolarized. Now, we talked about this last time. Bliss, if we correctly understand it, the bliss that is the true bliss of God, has no opposite. So it's not joy or ecstasy. And so it is part of the, if we could understand what Papa is saying there, then we would probably have that. But he's trying to make our minds reach for a higher place, a higher understanding. It manifests as a huge, hugely dispassionate nature in him. And Mother had the nature of that also. She had a father energy that was very strong. And she could bring out either one. And she was mostly, I won't say mostly, but a lot of the time she was very motherly in her way she told stories. And being around her personally, she was definitely that way. But when she spoke from the pulpit, and that's a special time, her talks are really, really unique and valuable because she is speaking from a state of authority that, as I say, is either recognized or not. But it is from what we know and feel and know in our hearts that it is a great authority for us. But when she speaks that way, she really does change. I'm really happy with the way the book, The Mystical Crucifixion, came out in that her teachings come out really clearly from her written, her spoken word. And it reads as though she was writing this. And Kate and her helpers worked on that quite a bit to try to get the conversational conjunctions and some of the things to be more like it was written. In other words, simple things. But Kate and I were just talking about this earlier today. Mother would say, now. And then she would start into another, what I call a paragraph. I say that the now, the word now, and used in the way she's using it, is an indication of a paragraph. And if you think about how it is used in conversation, it's a way of completing one thought and starting into another thought, and it's shown on the page as a paragraph. And so it didn't read, when we put some of these conversational terms in there, as they came out of a strict translation or transcription, then it didn't flow like a book the way that we wanted it, and we knew that the way that Mother wanted it. And Kate found a typed talk that we had done, I believe, through rev.com, but she found a talk that Mother had reviewed or asked someone to do, and it was in very good shape, but it was missing those words, just as we've done. So it gave us confirmation that what we did to make this book read the way that it does was what Mother would have done.
However, we must point out that the words that we took out were very, very few, some ands and some so's and some nouns.
Like I say, those are conversational things, exactly.
That was just about it.
Right.
I believe it was, sorry, Larry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I believe it was divinely guided, 100%.
Yeah.
Kate especially.
I agree.
You know, Just amazing. Even the last sentence that you read tonight, Kate, I don't even remember it. It's like, wow, what an ending. That last sentence, unbelievable.
She says, I give to you. What does she say? Yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it?
Something about knowledge.
The gift of knowledge, yeah. And I offer you this gift of knowledge, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder just what it is that we're about in this era of Mother's impact on the earth. Today it seemed like all of the work that we're doing is, I'm not saying this as a depressing thing that I was thinking in a depressed way at all, but that it is mostly to teach us, and that certainly Mother was warning me not to worry about, that wasn't my responsibility, our responsibility, to spread this word in expectations anyway. Without, I'm not saying we shouldn't, we should, but at the same time, we have to accept what powers that we have, capabilities that we have, and recognize that much of what the Guru does is invisible to us, and it is a radiation, or it's a change, a fundamental change in the world that is being brought about by these great Satgurus. And their work is the great work, and our work is homework. And hopefully it can be useful. Someone's study notes can be used later. And that we shouldn't get too wrapped around the notions of this standing in way of realization. That we have to do this work for Mother. And that's what we're here for. And we don't have to worry about realization ourselves. We're striving for that. I think this is a common experience for disciples of a great master. And I, you know, you look at, within a couple of generations, certainly things change a lot. And a lot of the, well, I mean, structurally, SRF, for example, it's made it so no one can be there. No one is going to be recognized and we will not, you know, we will not recognize you as being as great as master. The very thing that he really wanted and came for. Only master is the guru. And yet it's clear that if a person attains this great height, they will automatically become a guru. And to cut it off with some kind of a logical progression of thoughts that or ideas is not right. But it's quite common.
I guess that's kind of why my mother said no organization. It can be so distracting to have an organization. Mm-hmm. And it can be distracting to have jobs and to have and think that you are the guru and that you want to be doing seva for your guru, and that's been so much of our focus. But if we think we're the doer, and that this and that has to get done. I mean, that's a good thing in many ways. But as you say, it's really, it's for us as much as for anything. It's our sadhana.
At the same time, it can't become this overarching thing to do, because then we're more focused on that than on doing what Mother wanted us to do, which is our own realization.
Right.
And so if it enhances that, I certainly think for those of us that worked on this book, I know certainly for myself, I felt so close to Mother, and she was with me so intensely every day.
Yeah.
That that one could never think of that being a distraction. It was an immersion.
Yeah.
A total immersion.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's gone about in that way, it's a positive thing for sadhana. And yeah, if it's done with all these ends in sight, then it's then it can be a distraction maybe. Walking a fine line. I was reading that chapter today in David's book about Notes for Sadhakas, the razor's edge.
That's for sure. It really is.
Where we all walk.
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah. Because I can easily, just as easily, talk about it the other way. This is a great work, and we have to get it done. And of course, that's an easy conversation and an easy thing done for all of us. Each one of us can have that conversation, can make that statement. So it's not a... But it is that razor's edge. That's a good way of looking at it, because we have to be willing to leave any moment to gain our time with God sufficient to get realization. So two things come to mind. I've been reading a lot about Ramsurat Kumar, Yogi Ramsurat Kumar lately, but also I mentioned before about Sri Anamali, who was a disciple of Ramana Maharshi's, and both of them were kicked out of their ashrams at a point when the master could see they were ready and they needed to be forcefully sent out in Ramsurat Kumar's case. And, but strongly put out by Swami Anamali. And Ramana Maharshi told him to leave and he could move down the road to his own ashram, which ultimately became his own ashram. And Ramana Maharshi would walk around Arunachal every day, and so he would have his darshan every day. So he didn't have his daily work with the Bhagavan, as they called him, but he would see him. And then eventually Ramana Maharshi came up to him one day and said, "Now, I don't want you standing out here each day as I walk by. I want you to stay inside." Wow. You know? Wow. It's just it's so deliberate. And Swami Anamali was really quite just the ideal disciple. If you read about him, it's, you know, ideal in the sense that, boy, this is the way it should be done. First of all, it makes it seem easy, but of course it was not, I'm sure. It just, even what I just described. But he had many other very difficult things to go through. But anyway, he was very compliant to his guru, and the guru had never said anything that he didn't do and act on immediately. Now, Ramsurat Kumar was kicked out by Papa by the ashram, and he wanted to stay there. And it really lasted for quite a few years. He even came back in 1956. So this happened in 52, brought his family. And still, Papa and Mataji both said, "No, you can't stay here. We don't need any more helpers." And then he was still having trouble and even feeding his family, because he just couldn't work. And came back in 1956 and asked again. And they both said, "Mataji too?" Said, "No, you can't." He was an impossible person. And it's quite clear. I'm reading a biography of his right now, and he was really quite mad. Really was. Very much a very difficult personality. Very commanding. He just bowed at Papa's feet and had nothing but good, and would do what Papa would say, but it wouldn't last very long. So eventually they had to move out. But either way, and because I read through to the author was interviewing Yogiji, and to the point where Yogiji realized, you know, this is any other way I wouldn't have got what I've got. I wouldn't have attained the realization. Stunning thing. And it was, you know, one thing about a larger, longer biography, he goes into each place he was at and how people kicked him out and how many people loved him. But I mean, still, the things in his life were really terrible. He then finally broke with his family and didn't see them for 25 years. And that's when he attained somewhere. Well, before that, he attained realization in 1965. But when he broke with them and finally attained realization, I think that was from, you know, interestingly, around the same time Mother was at the ashram, 1957 or 58. And then he didn't see them again until 1982, any of his family. So it's very, very difficult. So, now, again, I'm not saying that's, and this is what Papa said, no, you don't have to, and Swamiji proved, you know, he attained full realization, and he didn't go off wandering. But certain souls with certain charge that's laid upon them as a duty to perform, or to attain the highest state, and then they have no duty, but they're staying in the body, and is it in itself a huge freeing and uplifting effect all over the world. Mother's latter years, I'm just convinced, were just done in sacrifice to us. She didn't need to stay. And I think, like David, she, in 1983, though she came out of it, she was, you know, astounded to realize God was going to put her through that. And David too said, you know, to Kate, you know, I didn't plan this and God gave me no warning on this. Correct me if I'm wrong, Kate. And so it seems that's the way he acted. He refused to entertain, let his mind be entertaining any aspect of either criticism or judgment or discrimination about it. David just accepted it, but still he could state the truth, which is, it's very strange. And it's not what he was, any will of his own. It's my will to do God's will. And it must have been very hard on him.
He was questioning how Mother's book would get done,
mm-hmm,
if he was to leave the body.
He was so close to starting. Yeah, we had everything ready to go, didn't we, at that point?
Yeah.
And then as you surmise, it was his gift to the world. In leaving the way that he did, he paid a price so the book could be born. And more than just that, the books, the publishing of many things from this Cross and Lotus. Well, you know, as I said that about David, it must have been very difficult. And I think it was on the human sense, and he's human, but I think it was hard on us, and that he had no, it was not difficult for him to accept what was happening. I'm not saying that at all. So acceptance was there.
It was, his expression was, when he talked about the fact that he didn't know this was coming, was just wonderment.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Not even confusion, just, mm-hmm, I thought my job was to get Mother's work done.
And it was.
And it was.
Wouldn't have happened without him.
No.
It didn't happen without him.
Yeah, it's a nice summary. The book ends in a kind of in the same matter-of-fact way that Mother tells all these stories in the book. And when she would tell these stories about this, she never was emotional about it. She wasn't, she was very much like in this book. It's, I hate to say the word neutral because lukewarm comes to mind, but it's not that at all. It's just dispassion. She really had a dispassion about it by the time that a lot of us knew her.
How about equanimity, Larry? Mm-hmm. Instead of neutral.
Yeah. Well, these are difficult things to describe because dispassion kind of means neither passionate one way or the other. And it does kind of sound like the word neutral would fit, but that has such a negative idea in it that it's...
And it's rightfully not so. It's not an active word, and that's a very active action.
And why did Jesus say, doesn't like lukewarm water, he'll spit it out? That there's a reason for that, for him trying to point us away from being too complacent. So again, to describe Mother correctly, dispassion is the better way, but certainly equanimity and certainly peace, for sure, yeah. But in order to really have a dispassionate nature, you really have to have peace. You really have to be at peace with all aspects of God and be able to react immediately with God's thoughts and God's acting through you. You can't be judgmental. You can't say, oh, I can't do that. You couldn't make me do that.
Well, Larry, just because you mentioned the end of the book, I hope you don't mind me mentioning, but just in case you forget, but you probably wouldn't at the end. But you were thinking of continuing on and doing the first two chapters that you asked everybody to read initially,
right,
so we'd all be sharing that together.
In a way, that's a good capping of it after what we've gone through reading it. And then I was thinking we would just do all four things, which is the preface and introduction in one class, and then either one or two more classes, the first and second chapters. And then...
It may even take more than that, actually.
Right. You know. Right, let's see. Let's see how it goes. You're right, yeah. Those are fairly long chapters. But as we all know, too, sometimes you read, I certainly do, I rarely read an introduction or a preface before I read the book. But when I get really interested in other aspects, after because the person writing the preface or the introduction already knows the conclusion of the book and has already gone through it. So, but that doesn't necessarily prepare, it is certainly not the way I read things anyway. I don't need to be coached. I don't want to be coached. I like to have the experience wash over me. But, I suppose academic types would prefer to have an introduction. But at the same time, then you have the questions that come up while you're reading it that the introduction can often answer. Some people start with the last chapter and read backwards. It's funny. That would have to be a book that's not plot oriented, I think. So what do you other people think? The conclusion is, Mother says, this is what it is. There it is. And what you've got ahead of you is when you get through this is worth it. That's the great knowledge that she gives us.
It was the conclusion from one talk, or
no?
What was the source of that?
Nothing was from one talk.
Yeah, nothing was.
The only thing that was a chunk was chapter 3,
There was one talk where she talked about the crucifixion, and she spoke about her whole process at the ashram more than in any other talk. So that is the only chunk. Everything else is almost paragraph by paragraph. It's all woven together from multitude of sources.
But keep in mind, to understand what's going on there, though, Mother, we had a clear idea how things were to progress. And as Kate started putting it together, she had maybe 10 locations in Mother's talks of a particular idea. And she would then mostly choose which is the best one of them. And then, of course, the more difficult and the creative part of the job was to tie them together. Again, we, as disciples of Mother, we know what Mother's, you know, the words anyway, we know what Mother was saying a lot. And so as we read them, we understand it. And then as we put it together, we did it. And, you know, Rebecca has pointed out that David had a different sequence in mind, more of a chronological sequence. And it's something that could easily be done in the future to do this another way.
The interesting thing is that this didn't go together quite as seamlessly as Larry was saying, because I started out with an introductory chapter, kind of introducing everybody to the whole. Larry said, I want to have everybody just kind of jump in, like, here's my experience. But I put together an introductory chapter, and then Larry said, no, it's too academic. Too academic. It's, you know, no. And I really had been proud of it. I liked the way it put together. It was really interesting, all this process that we went through. And sometimes I'd have another thing, and there it is. And then we read it together, and he said, no, well, that. And so it was very, you know, this is why it was not an easy process. And so while I did a lot of the weaving and things, Larry was really a very integral part of the whole thing, too, because oftentimes I really didn't want to do what he was saying. I mean, I was, you know, you get very attached to your own way of looking at things. And so I would come back to the drawing board and start again. And always it came out with something better. So that was really good. Always. And there were times that we, you know, I continued to not feel right. And we had some other people, you know, we'd have our helpers would all get their input. And every now and then we'd lock, you know, okay, I think this. And we'd have to come to something. And a few times there were things that some didn't like and some others didn't like. And we had to say, okay, this is what
we're going to do. But the thing about that process is it does give you several ways of looking at it. And then kind of we tended to agree on the final decision on the mixing of different things too, in that we would go into it and make a decision to change something we didn't like, something or we like. You know, the funny thing about your example was there were pieces that we used elsewhere. In fact, yeah. Chapter 3 is basically, yeah. But so the process of going through it is then you tend to know it when you see it. When you see it put together, you think, yeah, that's right. And you really don't know what's right until you start laying it out and putting it in and then seeing how it reads. How does one chapter flow into the next is really important in a book. And then the overall theme as well.
And I think, too, when you're tuning into Mother, which I think all of us did, she would start really directing the flow anyways. And then you knew that it was going the right way.
It doesn't have to be perfect. This is an exercise that any disciple of a guru can do with what they know about the guru. They can write their own book too. And see, because everyone sees the master differently and sees the teachings, you know, from their own vantage point, their own view. So I looked at David's stuff, by the way, and it's basically the sequence that I knew already because we had talked about it, and I wasn't surprised to see the sequence that it was. And it wasn't so much that we were ignoring that as we were, for me it was, we clearly had to have a free run at it. We had to be able to be free to imagine it, how it was going to go together. That was more important than a structure of any other sort. And of course, you know, with David too, his structure was a penciled in structure. It was just something to start with. And once it gets put down,
make a skeleton plan and then listen to God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was very easy to work with. Kate worked with him for years on making, you know, maybe this would read better this way and all. He really worked completely flawlessly that way with people. He was not dogmatic.
But when he told a little story about,
please do.
About David. So, you know, when he would come down to Ashland, he had scheduled interviews with devotees, and instead of getting an interview with him, and we'd meet at 5 o'clock in the morning out in the living room and have a meditation, and we'd meditate for about an hour and a half or so, you know, and it was really, really wonderful, you know, to be next to him. It was so easy to become uplifted. And so afterwards, after we kind of started coming out of it, I'd just sit and wait until he had something to say. And usually he would, you know, depart a few words of wisdom. But we were so uplifted this one time. I said to him, David, do you try and convey to people, you know, what this is? You know, because it was just, you know, you're up there in the clouds, you know, and he just looked at me with this funny expression on his face. And he says, every single time I speak. And so the reason I kind of laugh is it's just the same thing Mother was telling us tonight. You know, she's using every single word in her vocabulary, every inflection, every bit of her being to try and convey to us what is available. And in the same breath, she says, and it's completely inadequate. I can't begin to describe. So I think that's fascinating. You know, it's their job. It was Mother's job and David's job to try and convey to us as good as they possibly could, you know, to come along and what's waiting for us. But, you know, it's that old thing. If you've never tasted an orange, you know, it's kind of hard to describe the flavor of an orange. So if you haven't, you know, had that upliftment, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to describe an experience to somebody when they haven't had that experience. But boy, I sure do give them credit. You know, they just tried with everything they had their entire lifetimes. So, and we're all, of course, the great beneficiaries. But I got a kick out of David. You know, he's just kind of looking at me exasperated, going, what do you think I've been trying to do here, pal? You know? Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
But I think Larry's point of being the freedom to express, certainly a devotee should not have the freedom to, of course they do, but it's not necessarily a good freedom to misrepresent what their guru has taught them and to write a book or give
don't tell lies about the truth your guru taught you.
Absolutely. But on the other hand, a disciple, you know, the freedom to allow the guru to speak the way she wants you, how she wants you to present it. And we were very adamant that it would be Mother's words only in this book. Mm-hmm. It wasn't us talking about what we thought she meant. It was going to be her. Now, in the sense that we chose the words, yes, then we have that editorial imposition, if you like. But and each one of us, as Larry says, could put together a book of mothers that would be different because it's got our choice of what to pull out of it.
Just David like was clear that he gave you and Larry mother's work to do. Okay. David stated that emphatically mm-hmm. in this last month.
Yeah.
That he had given mother's work to the two of you to do.
Yeah. And David was always like that in terms of freedom.
And that's also was a blessing. You know, that was a, not just an assignment. That was a benediction.
Absolutely. I have to say, it's the strangest thing in the world tonight for me to hear what you're speaking about, because writing to me is a huge, huge ordeal. Like, I am petrified every time I have to go and write something. Honest to God, I have such a strong fear of failure that it takes everything in me to get going. And today I started rewriting, Kate, in wonderment and gratitude, and all you're talking about today is like, Mother is just comforting me. She's teaching me right now. It is just blowing me away. It took me, like, this is the first time in about 3 years where I have solitude. Ricky is staying over at our daughter's for 2 weeks. Because she's gone on a holiday. And so God's finally given this beggar some time she's been wanting forever. So today it took me till about 5 o'clock to get started when I, you know, that's my mission, right? I just was talking to Mother so strongly, begging her, you have to help me. You know, I cannot do it without you. And so she plopped me in front and she had me go really slowly. And so here we go. Hey,
very good.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, now you said it publicly, so you're committed.
You got it.
It's a strange process, writing, because on spiritual topics, because, you know, and everyone talks the same way, but it is the fact that the words you put and the way things are put together are not your own. Many, many times. Artists say this all the time. We've talked about that before, and it is true. But with spiritual stuff, you really look at it afterwards sometimes. And you, even if you don't know if it's a good job or not, not so much that, but that it's almost, the mother sometimes said too, you know, when people told me what I had said, this is Mother speaking, I didn't know that, as she would say. I was surprised that did I say that? Mm-hmm. And so this is an interesting process. Now, of course, it's a process that critics can go after, but at the same time, it is really, really is legitimate. This God working through us is really the great experience. And it doesn't really matter whether it's writing or art or music or your job or anything. It's literally God doing it. Yeah. It's such a wonderful way to see everything. To every, even the smallest detail, God's interested in.
Promise.
Well, Kate, when you're reading and when I'm setting the book down and just closing my eyes and listening, it sounds just like Mother. I mean, it sounds like.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Her voice.
Of course it is, but I mean, yeah, it does.
I mean, but so I mean, you guys did an amazing job, because it, it just sounds like she spoke the whole book, you know, it can't tell that there was struggle of the transitions or taking a word out in a few places or any of that. It just sounds like her talking.
Well, we really tried to do that. Like, sometimes, you know, like mother did say a lot of and we would take some out, and then every now and then we put it back in, because then it sounded like her flow. And we would read it aloud. Does that still sound like Mother? Does it sound like Mother? Because that was very important too. It was her book, you know, and had to sound like her. And
it does.
And that was something Larry was very, that was his idea at the beginning. And I'm really glad that we stuck to that, that it had to be only Mother.
Her voice.
Hmm?
Her voice.
her words, entirely her words. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in sitting at the feet of Ram Dass, we've got, you know, selected little things.
So beyond her words, her voice.
Her voice, too. Her voice, too. Mm-hmm. But that it had to be that and no little introductions. Now, sitting at the feet of Ram Dass was a different book. It warranted having a little editorial, you know, this is when Mother said this when she went to the ashram. But that book, we had none. There were no words after the introduction that weren't Mother's words. So that was just the way we, and that was just a decision we had, and that was Larry's suggestion. And in none, the other books might be all quite different, but this book, that was how it was supposed to be.
Before I can't forget, can I ask you to send the link for that song that you played for the meditation?
Now if you go to the minister's page, you'll see that I put the music that we play in the description, but I don't give you a link, I give you what the name of it is, and you can go and get a copy yourself.
You just
use it on YouTube.
Just Google it.
You can most of this stuff is on YouTube.
Yeah. Okay.
And if it's not, give me a, you know, write to me and I'll send it to you. It's an MP3. Yeah, wasn't that beautiful? There's music of that from that time, you know, Lorena McKinnon and the Celtic Twilight and, oh, who's
Enya.
Enya.
Is that really, who was Enya?
Oh, I don't know who this one was. This is something that's just, it's in my, I have a God folder and a church folder. And so this is under the church folder.
Of course you do.
You can't put God in a box, Larry.
But I could, but he fits in a folder.
You can put him in a folder.
It's called Deep Peace by Bill Douglas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty, just beautiful.
Wasn't it Jerry Trofimchuk who had a little article one time about Mother in the Drawer? Was that Jerry or who was it?
They had
something of a picture book or something in Mother in the Drawer. Might have been Steve Fisher. Forgotten who it was. So,
thank you.
I just keep coming back to the final paragraph, and it just sums up Mother's entire message, which she usually puts in so many words, trying in so many ways to reach varied listeners, but she just unapologetically states her truth in a nutshell. Here it is. I've given it to you.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Go to God.
Yeah. I am He. I am He. Yeah.
This is what struck me as I listened to is the authority that she was speaking from. It didn't need any help from anybody else or any proof from Master, from Ram Dass, from anyone else. This was her. And that's how Kate started out. This is my story.
Yeah.
But she also says and implies in that, this is my story. She says, my way of looking at the crucifixion. She's not trying to own it. Because I was there. And of course, when you read that, what went through my mind almost immediately was, makes you wonder if she was.
Yes.
In the way that we imagine the crucifixion, which she tries to disabuse us of, but she might have been living at that time and been involved.
That's what I thought for the first time. I hadn't thought of that before when I looked at the book. But this time, that really struck me was that she really was there. It wasn't just a matter of she experienced it.
She was there at the beginning, and God brought her back to do part of Master's work on bringing the Christ teachings, original teachings back.
Oh, that she lived in the time of Christ.
Yeah. See, I think that there was a great, as Mother says, I don't think that Jesus lived in the way that he's described in the Bible. But I think there was a great, great Master living then. And that's who this is. This is a parable that he told. Doesn't matter whether he told it in his lifetime or not, but this is a parable that resulting from his ability to control things in the earth. And when the people who were putting the Bible together, he was behind that. So because that story, that, you know, the truth in parable story is, it's hard for the truth to make its way through town without getting beat up. Whereas when truth travels with parable, everyone loves him. And so we are looking at the parable, and the truth is there. The interpretation of the truth still is each person's individual time and what's known at the time academically, all those kinds of things, and your own reading of it too.
So many people are still taking the Bible literally. And
again, it's fairly safe that way, though. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Mother would say, is that she said these people are in a position where they want certainty, and they want a doctrinal way of living, and they cling to it, and that helps them a great deal.
I like this when you, just for a simple part of that, I like to think about Moses. And you know, he came down and said, "I am that I am." And everybody's like, "Well, what does that mean?" Well, here, let me give you these 10 commandments until you get to there.
That's good. Exactly. Yeah.
You know.
Right. But even then, the 10 commandments can be looked at in many, many ways. And you can grow into the highest teaching from any of these ways. But they still, even in that course of each person's life, through will go through it different ways and will not need the Ten Commandments at one point, and we'll see the beauty of the value of them later.
Yeah.
You know, I think about how a baby is born and all the different stages they go through, and how this is what we're doing here on this earth too. It's so difficult to understand this world for the baby, just getting functional in it, to a great extent. On our larger lifetime of spirit, we are still moving along and just trying to comprehend what it is. Just trying to, and having all the goodwill in the world. You know, it's funny how babies don't have depression. You know, they don't have any of those kinds of, you know, suffering that goes along with knowing things. They just are constantly forced to, though, and this is why I think memory of other lifetimes is lost. You're forced to focus so tightly, and you get good at it, but you lose a lot when you do it. You take so much energy and effort to get good in the world that you're dumped into. And when we go into the astral world, it's the same thing. We're dumped in at different levels. So Mother told me just recently, in a way, it came in a kind of a vision about the causal plane, and it happens that they're going into the astral plane too. It's like birth on the physical plane. All of them have your first time out of the astral plane into the causal plane. You are there and functioning, but not nearly aware as people who have been there a long time. And then same with physical birth. You're there and you're functioning and you've had many lifetimes and you've been there many times, but even those people have a hard time with it. So of course it's true. As we travel, as we go into the astral world, as we go into the causal world. And so the idea that these are difficult transitions, or they're just transitions that take a lot of concentration and focus. The big thing that happens in the astral plane is the sense of freedom. So there's still puzzlement, still have all that aspect, but the sense of freedom and release from the heavy body and the constraints. And the, you know, when we're here, we have to sleep 8 hours a day just to function, because we have to focus so tightly just to get through. And we get better at it. And by the time we're in our late teens and 20s and late 20s and 30s, we're just completely able to, we have muscle memory, whatever you want to call it. We have complete capability to control things so well by programming them. But what have we given up to get there? So it's very, very interesting to think about. and Mother said when most people go to sleep when they leave this body and go into the astral plane, lose their physical body is how we normally talk about it, isn't it? They sleep in that plane. That plane is just a place where they're not really actively trying to get good at that language, at that world, because their next thing is to come back to this field and work on this stuff.
Sleep in heavenly peace, eh?
It's funny. That's one of the songs I played one time, and I just saw it tonight, and I thought, I love that thing, but I played it like too many times. Also, you know, it's too bad that's done by a young boy, a young boy then, a chiropractor now in Michigan, but he, Eric Huffman, I forget what I was going to say. The audio quality is not very good. There's a lot of distortion. Too bad. It was recorded too loud or didn't get re-recorded very well. So I've tried to contact him and get a new copy of some of that, and he hasn't responded to my YouTube. On the YouTube, there's a way to contact people, and so I sent him an email on that using that, and he probably doesn't check his. He could tell it's not a site that's used a lot.
Only to a 70-some-year-old would he be a young boy. He was a man.
Well, I mean, at that time, that was 23 years ago, 25 years ago. So at that time, he was in his early 20s. Yeah, in fact, maybe. I know that the Brent was only 21, and then I forget her name. Was only 18 or 19. Mm. So they were kids. Mm. They were in the throes of a great honeymoon with Bob Raymer. I mean, it was so much fun to be with them.
I was thinking, Larry, what's on my mind is that not only is the ending perfect, but the first sentence of the book is perfect, too. I came to show the way.
I know. That is really powerful. You're right. And, you know, and the subtitle in the book is the Way of the Cross and the Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's a good point. So chapter one, mm-hmm. That's the preface. I came to show you the way. I went the way myself because a very great master came into my life. Yeah.
Yeah. And it took her 12 years to get used to functioning in her body after she became divine.
Well, this is a process. She always explained it as a process. It took her 12 years to attain full realization after she'd had the big shock of being with
She was talking then later about getting how she could come back and function completely. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
She attained full enlightenment to be able to come back and function in the world again. Yeah.
That she had to have some ego to function. And it sounded like it took 12 years to kind of get used to that, which is, you know, in my world, like such a long time. And she did that so she could teach us, come back to teach us. Like you said, Larry, she didn't have to come back, right?
No.
So a big sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Regarding that, just so... We talk about these years, 12 years and 16 years. So David and I have gone around on this. If you go 12 years from 1958, you get to 1970 is when she finally came through it all. And by the way, in 68, 69, she was in India and asking that question of different saints. And they said soon, you will have it soon. So 70 does make a lot of sense because she often used the number 16 years to go through this. Now, the big event for her after Master's passing was the Nirvikalpa Samadhi experience in 1954. And again, that would put us 16 years past that date. It would be 1970. And then the 16 years comes in and confuses us somewhat. It could also be 58 to 74. And that's the year that David met Mother. He always wondered if that's what his soul was waiting for. So those are, but I think in this last, did it say 12 years in just what we were just reading? Yeah.
12 years to enjoy the state of balance, to come to the state of balance, which I now enjoy. So that completes the Sahaja experience. And,
So it seems to be 58 to 70 seems to be what she's talking about there. And it makes the most sense. Yeah.
And David had said, I asked him about that too, because in the transcripts we have Mother recorded saying 12 years, 13 years, yeah. 15 years.
Exactly.
She wasn't consistent about the number.
She may have been thinking of a date. Sometimes she's telling a story about something she remembers and that it was 13 years from that point on. But that's my only explanation would be that she was doing it that way.
When I asked David about it, he said that he thought it was 1970. That was the conclusion he had come to within
himself.
Okay,
that's good to hear, yeah.
That it was 1970.
So, speaking of that, I've been sharing with some others this crazy stuff with Yogi Ramsurat Kumar. He had a similar number. He had many more years. He had 20-some years. Excuse me. From 1947, so 18 years. 1947 was when God took him, made him unable to be very functional. And he still did teach. He was a headmaster at a school, several schools over the years. But he, in 1947, he met Ramana Maharshi, I think, or something happened within his own life that made him want to go down to South India. He was living up near Varanasi. But I wanted to share with you this thing that I've been dealing with inwardly so much, and just trying to understand Mother's.
And Larry's written an article for the journal, so you'll get that in the next.
Oh yeah, so it's in the. So in these two things, one of these is in the journal, and this next one I'm going to read to you is quite enlightening. So, you know what Master did, what Papa did to Mother is. Was really quite strong and difficult. So here's what Mother says. Papa stripped me of all the things of the human in order that he might show me the truth of my soul. And I have thought many times what a tremendous service he did me. But for him, I could not tell you the truth of the cross, the way of the cross and the Christ as I have experienced it within. Because he had the courage to hurt me physically, mentally, to put me through the greatest tortures in order that I might find the joy of God and the truth of being. There can be no greater love than this for any man, no greater love, what she calls it. He had the courage to hurt me, and she uses the word torture. Now, around this very same time, Ramsurat Kumar is a man, and he's an Eastern Indian man, so Papa treated him differently. His destiny was different, but boy, there's some similarities. So here's what he says. Let me read you this one part. This is the place where Yogi Ramsurat Kumar, so this was the Swami that I met at the ashram just recently, who's a disciple of Yogi Ramsurat Kumar's, and he sent me a video, and then I sent it back and or asked them to translate into English, so they did. And so he translates what he's saying in the video. This is wherein Yogi Ramsurat Kumar got initiation from Papa Ramdas after long waiting and several trials. One day when Papa was walking, both Ramsurat Kumar and Swami Satchidananda were following him. Yogiji requested Swami Satchidananda to recommend to Papa to provide him Ramnam initiation. Sounds like he was a little bit shy around Papa. Papa accepted immediately, and he blessed Yogiji in the same place showing here. After the initiation of Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, Yogiji got a madness of divinity. Yogi followed, this is 1952. Yogiji followed strong stubbornness, perseverance, and tireless efforts to chant this name 24/7. Due to his Herculean efforts, he was in the stage of divinity that Papa induced in his soul and body. We should also follow such a vigorous mind to set to keep a master's instructions in our life. Faith, absolute faith, unshakable faith is needed to follow a master. After the, then he talks about him traveling, and going around India. So then I found this other, thing that, where he says, in 1991, in the presence of Lee Lozowick, who is a well-known Western devotee of Ramsar Kumar, he again spoke of his dying at the lotus feet of my master Swami Ramdas. But this time he added some startling words. It was not this beggar's wish. He talked to himself as himself, about himself as a beggar. This was not this beggar's wish, Ramsar Kumar admitted. Ramdas did it by force. The smallness, the author again. The small twist created by these two short sentences invites a different view on the matter of the beggar's subsequent madness and surrender. So now, final thing, and I'll get this. He said, at one point in his discussion with a biographer who was writing about him, nobody can love this beggar like my father, Swami Ramdas, and nobody can torture this beggar like my father, Swami Ramdas. Mm-hmm. My father killed this beggar because he loved this beggar. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that sound like Mother, what Mother said?
Yeah, exactly. This is
So I would have put that in the article.
Especially the term torture, because you just don't hear that.
No, you don't.
No one uses that term.
Yeah, and they both use that word and hurt, you know, that whole business. I've always found it surprising when Mother said he had the courage to hurt me. Wow. But Papa, this is the thing, isn't it? Someone at Papa's stature can look at this and say, all right, this person can just keep struggling through and will get there in 50 years. Or two more lifetimes, whatever knowledge he has. And of course, Papa doesn't think in this way anyway, but he acts for God. But this is a way of pushing them through. All right, pushing off the cliff. Once you're off the cliff and you're flying through the air, nothing you can do about it. I know I've done my job, and you wouldn't jump yourself, so I'm going to do it for you. But I took a lot of courage to know that I was doing the right thing. That kind of thing, I'm sure is true. So this Papa character is pretty dangerous. We should be so lucky. Not in the least bit worried that it will be misunderstood in this group. But
I was just thinking, Larry, about a couple of instances in my life when I was in close contact with David. And there were two times when I felt very strongly that I had let David down, that I had let God down.
Mm-hmm.
Pure torture.
Yeah.
For a long, long time. It was close to unbearable.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Hein?
Yeah. You know, people who are close to Mother, everybody had some experience like that for sure. Mm. Yeah, she could be really hard on people. And a lot of times there was no visible out. No one else shared in that. Sometimes it was done publicly, but also so other times, yeah, it's done in that way. And it's agonizing.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I could barely stand it.
Yeah.
It's amazing, eh? Because God means so much in that form.
Well, what they offer us is such, what the guru offers us is so, I don't hate to even use the word desirable, but it is so many lifetimes desires. It's deep within us.
The simple thing is God offers the carrot, and if we don't go after the carrot, he gets out the stick.
Well, this is the interesting thing. They say you can take a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. This world of the spirit is different because they are not separate. God and the guru is not separate from us, and this is why they have the responsibility and they have the right to presume of these things.
If only because they know that the torture is short.
It's torture the other way too. It's a trade-off. And also, it's also the need of what Mother, when she pushed David through it, she needed him to be at a place where he could do his work. Mm. So those kinds of things are, figure into it. We try to figure this stuff out. We have no chance to figure it out. We don't know. But we have every, you know.
We can armchair quarterback. We're all good armchair quarterbacks.
Remember, Judy, you saying that, and I remember, you know, writing David this long apology letter and, you know, having not lived up to something. And he said, you don't have to apologize to me. It hurts me because I know it hurts you.
Yeah.
That's the only reason it hurts me. Yeah. Is because of what I know it does to your soul. Mm-hmm. I know what injury it causes to you.
Yeah.
And I can certainly relate to what Judy shared as well. And also to think of it in the terms of when something that, to look at it from the outside might seem so small, but inside it is devastating when it involves your guru.
Yeah.
And the soul pain that you go through in those moments is excruciating, but when your guru brings that forward, that aspect of your ego consciousness is brought forward in that way, and you're just at your guru's feet, or the master's feet with that part of yourself, you know, facing that part of yourself fully, and they're bringing that forward, you know, also to heal you, because we don't know what that's related to. From the past, you know, why that is so intense in that moment. It may be something from the long held past, that was very serious and has a deep impression in our, subconscious. And when the guru creates the circumstances where you're tested in that way and that part of your ego is brought forward, that they're actually, you know, helping to free you from it. Yeah. So that is that healing pain.
It is also
gets rid of the sickness. Yeah.
It's also a skull around Mother Kali's waist. You know, they literally are chopping your head off. So sometimes.
If you're ever afraid of those pictures of Mother Kali, look at the faces on the skulls. They always have these peaceful, blissful faces.
That's great.
When the heads that have been chopped off.
Mm. Peace at last.
Mm. She's terrified, but they look.
I remember when a group of us were going to watch the Awake movie at the Pickford Theater in Bellingham. And this is what Judy brought up that reminded me. And I can't remember exactly, but, you know, this is Bellingham. I live here, and I wanted to cut across in a certain way that I always cut across when I went to the Pickford. And I went ahead of David. And in that moment, it was like the God withdrew his grace from me, and I felt so much pain in my soul. And then when I talked to David about it later, it was just seemingly a small thing, but it was, oh my gosh, it was so painful. Because I was going out ahead of him, and I was supposed to be following him.
And it's funny, these can be, as you're describing it, we all think, big deal. You know, but it's your inner feeling, isn't it? It's your inner experience. And it's your knowledge that you did it, and the thought behind why you did it is unknown to us, right? Yeah.
In fact, it seems like when those kind of things happen, it is something that almost seems insignificant. And perhaps the guru doesn't even know that it is triggering something in you. And but it is interesting when you see that completely, you know, that completely realized master, then they are acting in the way God's directing them. So they might not be even conscious of the things that are going on in you, but maybe they don't talk to you. They turn from you and talk to somebody else, and that just destroys you at that.
Right.
And yet it's not really anything they're trying to torture you with, you know, but they're just moving because God is moving them over.
And God's telling them to do that.
This person and you over here.
Yeah. The doubt is not that mother didn't know that she was doing that, or it isn't that she didn't want to, she didn't want to give you any more attention. All of those things are not true. She was following God's will. Yeah, that's the part that hurts all the more, though. That hurts all the more.
I talked to him about it later, but I can't remember exactly. But he was aware of my experience of it, and but he was very kind because he didn't need to tell me any lesson. It was like the lesson had already happened, and it was like excruciating.
But you know, all the love and all the bliss we experienced, that pales into nothingness. You know, we had the treasures, we had such treasures, the divine love. You can't compare it with anything.
No, but it was just withdrawn for just
the
smallest second. And then it came back, and it was like, oh my God. Like, it was really powerful.
For me, it was the idea that mother had control of the relationship, not me. That, you know, in the sense that the relationship was only there because of she wanted it, not because I wanted it. You know, she had the power. It's not I chose to come to her, as I thought. Once that was revealed, and you just described it beautifully, Michelle. I think that's right. It is this, even a few seconds of this absolute horror, existential horror that, oh no, I've missed. I don't even know how to describe it.
But, yeah, I had the very same thing happen.
I know.
But you know, it's a key when you have that. Yeah. It's the hook they put in you, because when you've had that kind of experience, that they may withdraw from you.
Right.
And you could lose them. And then you realize that your life is not worth living without having them. Then it brings you an even closer. You know, so it's a blessing, really. It's a blessing.
And God withdraws it when we don't respect it. God's given us this gift. The gurus aren't punishing us. God's
not at all.
It's punishment of you. You're like punishing yourself.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't him doing anything. It was God. But. Oh man.
But it's a blessing. It really is a blessing to have that.
It is.
It really is a blessing.
Right.
Because they care about you.
Yeah. Okay, let's say our closing prayer. Oh Heavenly Father. Divine Mother.
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence
in every part of my being.
In every part of my being,
my heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one.
Hari Om. Hari Om.